Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I'm joined by my sister Kay, and we are going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the first season of Absentia, which is a Netflix, or not Netflix, it's an Amazon Prime. I knew it was Amazon Prime, so many streaming services.
Technically, it's an Amazon original that's included with your Amazon Prime membership. So I think if you're not an Amazon Prime member, you can pay to watch it episode by episode as part of Amazon Originals.
But it's definitely an Amazon original. On Prime, those are separate things. Interesting.
Yes.
And I think this was one of the first ones they may have done.
I'm pretty sure it was.
Stana Katic from Castle is the lead. Other actors we recognize were Stana Katic from Castle.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, one or two of them were like vaguely familiar as being like third tier character actors from something else, maybe.
There was a couple, like the guy who played the husband was on an episode of Castle.
See, I can see that.
The guy who played the brother is, I think, Icicle on Stargirl, not that we've started watching that yet. So, I mean, they've done other stuff. I think the guy who played the head of the FBI office at first had been in maybe some of the Harry Potter movies or something. So, I mean, it's not like these are nobody actors.
Right, right.
But they are not familiar ones. Out of the body of stuff we've watched.
I was going to say, they haven't headlined shows we've watched and stuff like that. And it's not like it's a show that pulled together the headliner of this show, the headliner of that show.
There are other shows where it's like, man, everybody they picked I recognize from this show or that show or this other show.
Well, it's funny because shows can kind of go three or four ways in terms of they pull names from a bunch of shows you recognize. Or I almost want to say kind of the Happy Days effect of whether or not you knew them going in, coming out, they all go on to do amazing careers.
And the Happy Days effect, I think, is a good way to phrase it. Because, again, all of those guys and girls either were major actors elsewhere or directors for a lot of them. And it's not unique to that show. You look at Baba Black Sheep.
Yes.
And that cast, John Larroquette, among other, you know...
Larry Minetti.
Larry Minetti from the original Magnum P.I. and stuff. Older shows have that possibility because there's been the decade or two or three or four for them to have gone on and done other great things and become household names.
Yeah.
Whereas something that is, you know, three series in, I guess would be the way to say. I don't know how often they've released this, but it hasn't had the time for that. And when I say these are not familiar faces, it's not that obviously I've seen a few of these I've watched all of Castle, I've watched the Harry Potter films, but they're not ones that I recognize. And I say that sitting in a room that literally has, I'm going to say like 1,200 Blu-rays or DVDs.
Yeah, probably.
At least 1,000. I know that much. I haven't kept the inventory up to date, but I mean, tons of stuff and that's just what I physically have on hand, not to mention, you know, decades and decades worth of watching too much television and movies.
Yeah.
So for them to find a cast that is unfamiliar has advantages.
Well, and I think of the, I always say top tier, because, you know, there are the regular actors in every scene or every episode versus the recurring. Those regular actors, I think they were predominantly American. And I say that because the recurring and then kind of those third tier here for an episode, maybe two, seemed to be Eastern European.
The core group sounded American at the very least.
Yes, I'll give you that.
And the fact that like the husband had been on an episode of Castle, I think they were ones who've worked in North America. There were others that it's not like they sound German or French or something like that, but they sure don't sound North American.
Yeah.
And not a plus or a minus.
No, they sound naturalized or immigrant.
They sound different than your typical actor in a North American television show or movie. And again, that's just, they've got a wider pool that they're pulling from.
Right.
And I suspect, I think we're both fairly certain, this filmed overseas.
Yeah, it felt like it filmed in Eastern Europe. And, I mean, in one environment, the accents made perfect sense. Mm-hmm. With the girl's name for flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, they should have Eastern European accents. That fits with what those characters are doing and everything. But, like, the psychologist, who was a recurring character for about half the episodes.
Well, it's funny because if you think back to the Pretender, the Sydney character, the psychologist there.
Yes.
Had, again, what sounded non-North American, European-ish.
A Frenchish accent. Yeah,
but it fit the character.
Yes.
Here, we're in the Boston FBI office and half the people don't sound North American, much less Bostonian.
Yes.
And again, nothing right or wrong about it, but it gives the show a certain flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And add to that the director who directed all 10 episodes that they shot concurrently, not consecutively, concurrently. Oh, we're doing all the stuff in this location. Let's film all that. Then we'll move locations, film all that. Let's, you know.
Which is how you would film a movie.
And this is like a 8-ish hour long movie.
Yeah.
Which is to say maybe 4 times too long.
Well, yeah, I commented, and you agreed after the first episode, it was somewhere between art house and leisurely.
Yeah, it had, I think it was The American was the other movie we'd watched that was done over in Europe or whatever with that sensibility.
Mm-hmm.
It's a slower, different storytelling style. This, I believe, is listed under the thriller kind of category, which I did not find particularly thrilling.
Mm-mm.
And honestly was not too thrilled with, because there's certain aspects of that genre where it's out of my wheelhouse. There's a couple of things about the mass murderer's MO that I found disgusting.
Yes.
And I'm queasy, so that's just me. But also, that almost European art house feel to it, it was slow, leisurely paced, not, oh my god, get on with it, but right on the edge of that.
Well, and part of it for me was they weren't giving us many red herrings. And I almost want to add to that, they weren't giving us many viable red herrings. Because when they were giving us red herrings, give it 20 minutes, they'll kill them off.
Yeah, I was going to say, there was a couple episodes where, oh, well, this guy's crooked. And by the end of the episode, he's had his brains blown out.
Yeah.
I guess for me, it's not a matter of not having red herrings, because I was almost considering everybody a red herring. But a matter of not having enough information trickling out for us to be piecing together what happened. So by the time we get to the end and, oh, that's who's done it.
Yeah.
I felt, well, wait a sec. Okay, we knew she was an orphan, but you didn't really establish this part of it. The character who was the big bad we'd seen before, but in a way, a couple of times before, but not in a way that felt like it was a recurring or major character.
Well, the first time that we go to Nottingham Park,
mm-hmm.
and we see a tree with a single name etched in it. I told you I wanted a second name to be etched in it, whether or not Emily saw it.
The name you had wasn't the right person, but it at least would have established the right person.
Yes.
Yeah, I think there was some stuff there that they could have and should have set up better. And the whole mystery of what's happened to Stana's character, Emily, over the last 6 years, what led to all of this, the status quo change and all of this. You know, I didn't expect to have it, you know, just thump thump, here it is. I'll be honest, I was expecting a little bit more of a standard procedural aspect of the show.
I was expecting a mystery where we get clues we can piece together.
Well, an FBI person solving kind of their own abduction, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Versus what I felt we got was almost more along the lines of The Fugitive with somebody always on the run.
Yeah.
So I didn't have kind of the right expectations. Add to that things of this is supposedly set in Boston, but it doesn't feel like Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And a leisurely storytelling style where there was a couple of scenes where, in some cases, I think with some good editing, you could have really tightened up to what I would have considered an acceptable pace. There are other parts where they needed better direction to speed it up. And that's not to say that they did it wrong. They did it the way they wanted to do it, presumably.
Yeah.
It just took a little, because there was a couple of times where somebody would say something, and you know what the next line is. And we had time to say it, chuckle over it, and then they'd say it.
Yeah.
Rinse, repeat for a couple of times, because it's, you know, Well, do you think she did it? Well, no. Well, neither do I. You know, or whatever the exchange was. There's some of it, it's predictable patter for these sorts of shows and the situation. And, I mean, to me, that's not a bad thing, because there's an aspect of some of these things write themselves because you're expecting certain things.
Yeah.
And you can either flow into that and it's good, because it feels natural, or you flow against it and go against type, and oh, it's shocking or whatever. And sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. And there was aspects of the whole grand plot of what really happened those years ago that just kind of didn't make sense to me.
How? Which parts?
Where the big tank was, how some of it got moved, when we get the reveal of where things were actually happening at the end, how the hell did that setup get put in place?
Okay, where things happened at the end makes absolutely no sense for out in the middle of nowhere where it is. I mean, if it had been near a subway system, it would make sense.
If where she had been held and where the things at the end happened, if that had been where the original thing they go find at the warehouse was, but just like below it in the sub-basement.
I was going to say a tunnel system under it, yes.
Totally, totally. Yes. They just relocated a, you know, 50 feet below or something. I'd have been fine with that.
Yeah.
But given where they'd set it, and it's like, because when they set that up, there's this photo that Emily's using to kind of, where was this photo taken from? And the photo was such that I couldn't really tell what the hell was in the photo.
Yeah, I actually mistook it for the park at first. Yeah.
But when she's finally standing in it and has it lined up, it's like, okay, I see it, but if I didn't know what I was looking at because we just walked from a certain location,
yeah,
I wouldn't know what the hell I was looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly, oh, well, from here, you know, we go into the environment, and I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah, the environment that she descends into makes absolutely no sense for where they've put it.
It felt like something of, okay, if you're gonna go there, you need to explain it. If you'd said, well, at this point in the backstory of the universe, this had happened, and this was built, it was, you know, discarded, unused, and it was found later, you know, whatever.
But the thing is, for the trees that existed.
Yes, there's a certain aspect of you would have almost had to go, well, back in World War II.
Yeah.
This was set up for this purpose, it got unused, the forest grew over it, or whatever.
Yeah.
But no explanation at all, and it was a major set piece location that without which the story didn't happen, kind of thing. That bothered me.
Well, there were things, I mean, I commented at one point, the show needed at least one more subplot, or a subplot. Because to me, we were only focused on Emily, what happened to Emily, what's happening to Emily.
Well, it's funny, because the whole story was about Emily, but it's not that the whole story focused on Emily. We would cut back to the husband, the brother, the cop. So there was a lot of time where we're not, if the whole thing was we were bolted to her side the whole time.
Well, and I get what you're saying, but I guess what I'm saying is when we were with the cop, it related to Emily.
No, absolutely. I agree. I guess my point is because we weren't staying at Emily's side the whole time, it totally opened up the door, like you said, to cut away to another subplot of something going on.
Exactly.
And it never did? I mean, there was a couple of things where they would tease, oh, this kid's getting, you know, bullied because of this, or there's something going on here, but it was tangential and then dropped.
Yeah, I mean, we felt like we were going to get a subplot where Nick, the husband, is trying to balance, my first wife came back from the dead, but I'm married again.
Yeah, the love triangle that built up, but there were times where it was just dropped.
You know, and well, second wife, Alice, first of all, is a horrible FBI wife. When your FBI agent husband gets a call in the middle of the night that wakes the household from a dead sleep, you don't yell at him, who is it, what's going on, and such, so loud that he can't hear what's being said on the phone.
Agreed, because that's the you can save her if you're there in 60 minutes or whatever. That call, he recognized the voice. We later find out that was digital alteration?
Seems to have been, yes.
There are a couple of things like that where I really would have appreciated in the final episode of the season, kind of the parlor scene of the classic whodunits, where the detective very conveniently, with the aid of flashbacks, explains what the hell happened.
Yes. Well, and it uses very similar wording to something one of our red herrings says.
Yes. And it was unclear why that phrasing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's funny because it wasn't a bad show. But if it had not had a lead actress that we were familiar with from, you know, 8 seasons of Castle plus some other work she's done.
Mm-hmm.
She was in, I think, one of the Librarian movies. I don't know that I would have stuck with this beyond the first episode.
Yeah. Well, and for me, part of it is, I mean, because each time we do these podcasts, we end up talking about this character's arc, that character's arc, how this character grew, how this character evolved, what happened with this character. And I was sitting here before we recorded, racking my brains, going, you know, well, Emily really is pretty much the Emily we found. And albeit all this takes place probably in, what, a week, 2 weeks? I mean, it's a very compressed time frame.
Maybe a month or so, but a fairly short time frame, yeah, yeah.
You know, but Nick goes downhill, in my estimation, with the husband, with every episode.
Agreed.
And
agreed.
Truly earns the nickname his father-in-law gave him.
Well, there's also the aspect of Flynn, the son, wants nothing to do with the mom he doesn't remember. After the go-kart thing, suddenly they feel inseparable or whatever.
Yeah.
I didn't feel they earned that.
No.
The brother's arc of having been a recovering alcoholic who falls off the wagon and then suddenly is okay-ish again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is he helping or is he not? Why? That kind of thing. It was all over the map.
Yeah.
And I don't know that any of the characters had an arc so much as a set personality that they used to react to the situation with.
And really the situation was Emily. What's happening with Emily? What's Emily gonna do? How's Emily messing up my life?
How's Emily messing up my life, and how can we blame Emily for everything? Yeah. And the whole thing was, did she do it? Did she not? What's going on? The whole core mystery.
Did she fake her abduction? Has she truly been missing for 6 years?
Well, and the whole faking the abduction thing, when she's found in the pilot episode, she is in a tank of water that's, I don't know, 4 feet at least high, that many across, 8 feet across, you know, whatever. I mean, it's filled with water. It is sealed on the top with a bolt through, keeping the lid down, with padlocks, one of which is an electronic one or whatever, that there is literally no physical way somebody in the tank could have threaded the bolt and hit the padlocks on. It just couldn't happen. So the whole concept of, well, did she do it to herself? I found completely absurd.
Yeah.
Did she have an accomplice? Okay, that's viable.
But the only accomplice they considered was in jail at the time.
Yeah. And the twist they do on that at the end, I didn't care for.
No.
And I know there is the second season out. The third is about to drop as we record this, but probably long since out by the time I release this. I'm not sure where I would take this show on a second season.
Well, for me, the first season was a lot of messing with Emily's mind.
Emily's, her husband's, everybody's. It was the whole mind game kind of a thing.
Yeah. And I do get where the person who reveals themselves finally.
The you ruin my life, I'll ruin yours.
Yes.
It just seemed like a hell of a lot of effort to go to.
But it was interesting that it seemed like the person had tried to put Emily in a place to regain her relationship with her son, only to destroy it.
Well, that person was expecting Emily to have been completely broken, murder a number of people.
Yes.
And when Emily didn't, that person stepped in.
Yeah. Which is why the very final thing doesn't make sense to me. Because that person out and out admitted, when you wouldn't kill the person I needed you to kill, I stepped in.
Well, and there was the whole possibility of, with the shrink who vanished at one point, split personality. Is Emily both the victim and the perpetrator?
Yeah.
Which, again, they, I think, set some okay, there's possibilities for that, other than the how could she have locked herself in the tank aspect.
Yeah.
There were a couple things that I think if they'd done a little bit differently, would have made things like the multiple personality thing a bit more viable. And having this strung out for 10 episodes, and they were, I think the first was maybe an hour, but the others were mostly 40-ish minutes.
Yeah.
Like 41, 42, which is, I guess, roughly TV length. But it was funny because they felt really long.
Yeah.
Even though it felt like not a whole lot happened. And part of that's, again, the slow pacing to the story.
Well, and part of it is I got frustrated with things like they would say she was in drugged water, and we know she was drugged throughout her captivity, but there's never the, hey, if we took some of her hair and tested it, we'd have kind of a timeline of drugging on
her. Or any mention of the kinds of drugs, how that would have impacted her memory, anything of that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see where they were going for. I think it was a decent show. I think if I was more in tune with that thriller kind of a genre or whatever, and that whole suspense sort of a thing, maybe I'd have clicked with it more.
Yeah.
Because maybe it's filling that genre kind of thing well. It's just not the sort of thing I typically watch.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the character that worked for me, and part of it is, like you were saying, they made a character and then it's kind of a stay true to, was Emily's dad.
He was probably the best character of the bunch because he stayed true to himself, never really felt like, well, can I trust him or not?
Mm-hmm.
But I take it back. There was one bit where suddenly I'm like, wait, how did he know that? And sets him up for a potential arc next season.
Oh, yeah.
But every other character, I'm like, well, is the new wife, is she the one who does it? Is it the brother? Is it the, this cop seems a little off, you know? And it seems like everybody we meet, we're immediately made suspicious of. And for a mystery story, there's an aspect of that that makes sense. But when you start to question everybody investigating, everybody involved, it's like, I can't trust a damn person. And again, that's to put us in Emily's mindset.
Well, part of it with the new wife was she seemed too good to be true. And then she turned on Emily awfully fast. And to me, that didn't fit with the personality of too good to be true.
Yeah, but I think there were a couple of personality flips, like when the brother gets drunk and some of that stuff, that just I didn't feel they earned.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So I think there were some aspects of the writing that another pass might have been able to shore up if they had seen the same perceived weaknesses that I do. I do believe, like I said, they shot this all concurrently, you know, one location, yeah, another location. So that meant they were bouncing between 10 episode type of story aspects, mm-hmm, between scenes. I think that was a smart move to do for filming and logistical reasons, and I don't think it hurt the show, but I think this sort of story, the way it was told, the way it was envisioned, lends itself to my kind of mind coming out of it thinking, kind of, a, oh, wait, what the hell just really happened? Or that's where you're going? I don't know. And
yeah.
And it wasn't bad, but I was hoping for a lot more.
Well, the thing that I felt they never, not just never earned, but never gave us enough, because we got a few throwaway lines of dialogue that were supposed to satisfy me on, was we're told and shown that Emily was a very violent, horrible kid at the orphanage, really. And then,
well, we're shown one example where she really beats the crap out of a kid.
Yeah.
Who might have had it coming. And now it's suddenly that she's always this way.
Yes. We're shown that same clip like four times because, yeah, she's unadoptable because of it. But then we're told that when she does get adopted, she's constantly afraid she's going to get sent back, and that the parents focus their attention on her instead of the child they already have.
The feeling unworthy, I think when we finally got an explanation for it, made sense in terms of, I can see where that event would have led to this, but I never understood what led to that event.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel, it felt like they were trying to retcon her character in that final episode of the season, and that kind of bothered me. I'm curious where they go moving forward,
mm-hmm,
but not so curious I'm thinking, wow, we've got to start that second season right this instant sort of a deal. Or, you know, not saying we got to put it off either. It's,
yeah,
it's one of those where we've had one or two shows where, you know, first season, that was enough for me. Others, it's like, man, we're done with this. I immediately want to go to the next.
Yes.
And this is one of those, you know, there are other shows we've got stacked up.
This is one where I'm afraid if we don't immediately go to the next season, we won't get to the next season.
I think there's a high risk of that, and even if we did, we'd have lost the thread from this season.
Yeah.
So, odds are we'll continue with it. But it's one of those that if we were fully stacked up with regular television stuff coming out, because again, we're recording this, you know, only a few months into the pandemic, hopefully near the tail end of it, but
during summer hiatus of the pandemic.
Well, yeah.
Which is a double whammy on no new TV.
Well, a summer hiatus that came after an abbreviated season with no real summer season to speak of, and a fall season that may get pushed to January for some shows. So we'll have time to get to probably most of what we've got in our backlog, which is good but sad. And I like Astana as an actress. I think mm-hmm. she did a great job in Castle. I've liked some of her other work. I think she's doing a good job here.
I don't feel they gave her much to work with. I mean, they played and leaned heavy to the PTSD in the early episodes.
But even that kind of went away for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was... I think they could have given her better material, but I think they wrote what they set out to write.
Yeah.
Which is my frustration, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was expecting, not realizing, again, kind of the mindset they seem to come at it with, both in terms of thriller and maybe more of a European approach to it, I was expecting it to be more of a standard FBI procedural where the case they're working is themselves.
Yeah.
Offering flashback opportunities and exploring the memories they're starting to get and
yeah,
the whole sense of identity kind of quandary.
Mm-hmm.
But in a she's not completely crazy kind of a way.
Yeah.
Not that she's completely crazy here.
No, but she fit in a homeless camp really well.
And an insane asylum.
Yes.
So there... Again, it was not quite what I was expecting.
Yeah.
And that's not a plus or a minus. It's just I knew the vague concept, hadn't really done any kind of serious research into it. And it's a bit of a dark, depressing show in some respects.
Yes.
And I don't know that... I don't expect that would change in future seasons.
Well, one of the things that I'm still trying to puzzle out is that all of this is revenge because someone else was hurt as a child. And that person was hurt by someone who had been a professor at MIT and then became the director of an orphanage. And I don't see what he could have been doing at MIT. What technology, in other words, was involved.
I think he was in the psychology department, if they have such a one, trying to do mind games to kind of build the perfect killer for the government. That's more or less what they said at one point.
Mm. I caught the whole government contracts and...
But there's a couple of things, again, that they leisurely tossed in throughout the whole series that, again, that scene at the end, were really, if we had had the finale almost be intercutting between the action we had at that one location and the FBI office with, okay, guys, we've been at this for weeks. Let's run through it one more time. What do we know? And have that cut to cue the, well, what about this? Oh, that doesn't work. What about this? Oh, that works. What about?
Yeah.
And them piecing it all together for us.
Yes.
And then it's like, wow, you know, from this angle, it doesn't make sense. Man, you twist it 45 degrees. It all lines up. It's a straight line. I see it.
Yeah.
But if you hadn't started from point A to get to that point or something.
Yeah.
And if it had felt like, you know what, you really did lay all this out, not consecutively in the episodes, but the clues shouldn't come that way necessarily.
Yeah.
But if I had reordered them, I should have had that. Whereas here, I felt so many things came out of the blue in the finale.
Here, Nick, the husband, barges into a locked room that contains both his wives and points the gun at the first wife, assuming she's the guilty party holding the second wife hostage.
Whereas for part of the season, I was thinking the second wife was in question.
Yes. But I'm like, you had to break into a locked room to find them. Locked from the outside.
Yeah. There was a lot of things where he was not...
worthy of being an FBI agent?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
I was trying to think of a better way to say that, but yeah. And I was never really convinced the Boston PD detective was particularly great either. But I expect most of these characters to return for the second season.
Mm-hmm.
But it almost feels like they have to be on a different case. But then what through line do we get?
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
And is it just Emily's kind of nuts? So I'm curious where they go with this.
Yeah.
And if they tighten up the storytelling a bit.
I hope they tighten it up slash the leisurely doesn't work for me.
Well, and that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Between editing and directing, of just spit the damn line out, dude. You know, when they would have these almost Shatner-esque pauses at times. It's not dramatic. It's almost melodramatic.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of places where they did some really good stuff. Okay, I could see where this would lead a character to think of this and so forth. It's not bad. But I also think there's some people that would love this, some people that would despise this, and a huge continuous, it was okay.
Yeah.
Which is pretty much where I'm at.
Yeah. I'm kind of middle of the road and hoping that the second season not only is better, but makes the first season feel better, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'd be impressed if you could do that.
Well, but if it gives us more crumbs, if it gives us more information that kind of goes back and fills in holes.
If it can fill in holes without feeling like it retcons.
Yes.
And given some of the stuff that happened near the end of the episode, I don't have enough faith in the writing team for that. I hope to be wrong.
Yeah, time will tell.
Yeah. Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.